Welcome to episode 127 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live May 24th, 2019. This is a show about Office 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. In today's episode, we discuss racing Teslas in boring tunnels, the internet in the sky, and the latest news from the 2019 SharePoint conference.
We have liftoff.
We have liftoff. Liftoff of the podcast. I watched the Falcon 9 liftoff last night.
SpaceX. Did you watch the Tesla racing the other Tesla in the Hyperloop tunnel or whatever those underground boring company tunnels are?
The boring company? Tesla's racing in a boring tunnel?
They did the whole, like,
I have
they
not.
Did the whole let's race in a tunnel in, I don't know what city, wherever they built that tunnel, LA or wherever. And then the car driving in traffic above it and having to deal with stoplights and all those kinds of things. It looked like a kind of fun ride. They get up to 127 miles an hour in that tunnel. In the car.
Oh, I was hoping they did faster. I did that on the Vegas Speedway at the SharePoint conference back in 2011.
Well,
I went 120, but then it was on a racetrack. A tunnel probably gives you a different feel.
Probably.
Did they do the whole Men in Black thing where they like drive the car up on the side and then on the ceiling, the roof of the tunnel? And
No. Those tunnels don't do that, but...
Oh, you can't really do that? With the little red button? The red button in the Men in Black car isn't like the insane mode on the Tesla?
Not yet, it's not. I don't think.
Remember the red button? Don't ever push the red button.
Don't ever push. Okay, well, I can keep that one in mind.
And all of our listeners, I wonder if we have listeners that are young enough that they have not... When was Men in Black? That was high school,
I think. A long time ago. We'll have to wait until the new one comes out because, you know, they're doing a remake because everything's a remix.
Yes. Are they still coming out with a Top Gun remake?
I don't know. Maybe. I think Tom Cruise is in it, right? How much of a remake can it be?
I don't know, but I heard he wouldn't do it if they would do CGI. He wanted to actually fly in the planes again to film it.
He's my hero.
Yes, that was another movie where I was with a bunch of middle schoolers once and they showed a clip of it and all the middle schoolers were like, what movie is that? And thanks, now I feel old. That one though was the 80s, I think, was when that one came out. Still a great movie though. I watched it not that long ago.
Goose.
Goose and Maverick. Good times. So speaking of going 120 miles an hour, old SharePoint conferences, There was a SharePoint conference this week. We're recording on Friday. It happened over the last 4 days. There was something else I was going to say too along that line of boring SpaceX. Oh, the SpaceX launch last night. Did you watch it? Did you go outside and look at it at all?
Outside? You're crazy. We live in Florida. One doesn't just go outside, even at night. There's wild creatures and heat out there.
I was going to say, it wasn't that bad, but there are weird creatures out there. No, it was one of the better ones I've seen. Like it had a really cool blue tail as it was going. Like normally you just see the orange flame. And this time it got up high enough and it like got a really long blue tail. I don't know what it is in the atmosphere that causes that blue streak to go longer, but then you could see it how as it goes through the outer atmosphere, how the flame kind of like spreads out and you get almost that arc thing. It was, you could see it for a long time and it actually looked really cool last night.
Starlink. We're living in the future.
60 satellites all deployed. Are they online yet? I saw Musk tweeting, but I never saw final confirmation that the internet in the sky came online.
I'm sure it's coming at some point.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. That's a lot of satellites, though, that they have to get up to get full coverage. It'll be fun to watch the project progress. As IT professionals in the cloud era, sometimes it feels like we don't speak the same language as the rest of the organization. So when stakeholders from finance or other departments start asking about a specific project or team's Azure costs, they don't always realize how much work is involved in obtaining that information, sifting through cluttered CSVs and a complex mess of metadata in order to manually create custom views and reports. It's a real headache. On top of helping you understand and reduce your organization's overall Azure spend, ShareGate Overcast lets you group resources into meaningful cost hubs and map them to real-world business scenarios. This way, you can track costs in the way that makes most sense with your corporate structure, whether it's by product, business unit, team, or otherwise. It's a flexible, intuitive, and business-friendly way of tracking Azure infrastructure costs, and it's only available in ShareGate Overcast. Find out more on ShareGate.com/ITPro. We don't have to keep talking about internet in the sky and SpaceX. We can talk about other cloudy stuff.
Oh, then what do we talk about?
Or on-prem stuff. We can talk about SharePoint on-prem in the cloud.
Can we? Please not. What's SharePoint?
Well, there was one announcement that came out about it.
Where did this announcement come from? You got to take a step back there.
Where did this? Oh, well, we kind of talked about it. The SharePoint conference this week.
Mm.
And then I jumped to another topic right after that. SharePoint conference this week, the last 4 days, was out in Vegas. So there were a whole bunch of SharePoint-y type announcements that, as we've talked about before, the cloud merges, it starts spanning other stuff too, like Teams and I think there was some Flow and Power App stuff out there, but mostly all around SharePoint. But there was one SharePoint-y announcement that I found interesting that did actually deal with SharePoint on-prem in the cloud. So, you know, we've talked about it before, how with content databases, they've always had that flag in there for content databases in Azure SQL.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There is a property in there that lets you know if it's a SQL database or not.
There is a property in there. Well, they announced at the SharePoint conference that using not Azure SQL databases, like the single database things you can spin up, but the managed instance of SQL Server is actually now supported with SharePoint 2019 running in Azure.
Yeah. So this is an interesting one. It's kind of one of those enablers for customers that might run SharePoint in IaaS inside of Azure, which I don't know. Like, there's still weird licensing things where, yes, you can run SharePoint inside of IaaS, but you can't run workloads. Well, you can run workloads like Office web apps. You just can't license them properly and they're not supported. And so basically you really can't run them at the end of the day. It's still a little bit of a kind of hobbled thing up there. But if you don't want to stand up SQL servers anymore, which could be a good thing, maybe you have vCores on-prem already. Again, go ahead and bring that licensing over so you're not managing IaaS SQL. Could be a pretty nifty option.
Yeah, it was like we kind of all figured, I think, hey, it's got to be coming eventually because they started putting those flags and those abilities in there without ever supporting it. And here it came.
Well, MI is not quite Azure SQL though. So yes, you could run your content databases inside of Azure SQL, but there was all sorts of weirdness with that because it's not a 100% on-prem Microsoft SQL Server compatible database instance kind of thing. It's got some weirdness to it and you're managing, DTUs and not so much IOPS or things that you might manage in traditional on-prem land anymore. MI is a managed instance is much, much closer to on-prem Microsoft SQL.
Right, because then you're actually just running, I mean, my understanding is that managed instance is much more, it's literally an on-prem SQL, but you're just not managing the hardware, the infrastructure. Because like you said, you're still picking vCores, you're still picking memory. It's kind of like you're specking out a VM, but you don't actually own the VM that runs your SQL Server.
Correct. And there's still some weird things with managed instance as well. So you and I were chatting maybe last week about the way it sits on VNets and it can do certain things, but it can't do others. There can be collation issues. They just fixed things like the ability to support like non-UTC time zones. And there's just some weird stuff with it. So it's kind of a newer service, but it is an option if you go that way. I've been hesitant to run SQL in Azure, or not SQL, SharePoint in Azure IaaS, just because it doesn't support everything. So you're almost a little bit better off running it on-prem, especially if you're going to use like Office web apps and workloads like that, which really light up the experience, right? If you're standing up SharePoint for document collaboration, you're probably going to want features like that.
Yep. It is interesting. And like you said, I ran into some of those. I wasn't doing the managed instance for SharePoint. I was doing it for actually some BI workloads for a client that's trying to migrate a data center all up into Azure. And we did run into some limitations. Like you said, there was some weirdness with DNS that I have to figure out yet. And we ran into some things where like global VNet peering, not all of the... There's certain features in managed instances that support VNet peering, or is it local VNet peering, but not global VNet peering? So there is some weirdness with it. Again, it's supported, so it should work, but this is relatively new.
Yeah.
And we can throw a link to the show notes if people want to go read more about it if they're interested in giving it a shot.
Yeah, yeah, I'll make sure it's in there. So, and just to, since we're talking about it, to call it out, this is support for managed instance for SharePoint Server 2019 and 2016. So it doesn't go back to 2013 or things like that if anybody is still running that and thinking they're going to get out of managing SQL servers. But I'll make sure we have the links to even the official configuration docs along the way.
Yes. So what other announcements? Do you want me to start picking them off?
We can kind of start wherever you want.
At the top.
Yeah, it was all about intelligent intranets, right? This is like the year of the intelligent intranet again. Like it's the year of Linux on the desktop.
No, last year was the year of the list. Remember, we did that interview with it was Adam Harmetz, I think.
Yeah,
and that was the year of the list.
Well, that was just a long time ago.
That was at Ignite last year. That was only like 6 months ago.
I can't remember what I did yesterday, let alone what I did 6 months ago.
Yesterday. You were probably flying. That's just my default answer now is, what was that? You were probably on a plane.
Yeah.
Because you're always on a plane now.
That's my life. All right. So it is the year of the intelligent intranet. Let's talk a little bit about it.
All right. So intelligent intranet, they are coming out with these new home sites that are built on communication sites. So now we're going to have team sites, communication sites, and we are going to have home sites, which are, in Microsoft's official definition, an intelligent, integrated employee experience, a landing page for your organization that does a whole bunch of things. So it's doing a lot more with Microsoft Search. And this was another, it was a focus of the SharePoint conference, but I feel like it left a lot to be desired. And we can go into that. But it ties into Microsoft Search. It's going to give you the whole mega menu navigation stuff that came out with communication sites and hub sites. It's going to start trying to more intelligently surface news and content to each user based on themselves. So almost think, if you've been a longtime SharePoint person and you've done audiences, think like intelligent audiences, where it's going to start intelligently figuring out what you're supposed to see or maybe what you should see. Both as it relates to news that's posted on different SharePoint sites, content that you're working on. Surfacing that, it's going to bring in some of the video stuff, some of the Microsoft Stream stuff, tie in Yammer, because Yammer is still alive and kicking with new features coming at the SharePoint conference. I was going to say every day, but it's not really every day. And we can dive into some of those. And based on what I've read about this and what I've seen is it's also people are going to be able to start personalizing that content. So it's really your personal homepage. Don't think of home sites as an intranet as much where you set, hey, this is what I want all my people to see. It's more of, hey, this is what I want to see. This is the information I want curated in. It's going to use the intelligence to curate an information. So it's very much, the goal of it is very much to be that personalized page for you that brings all your content in. It almost takes that portal.office.com where you go today and you can launch all your apps and see recent documents and all of that. Taking that to the next level where it brings in a lot more information, but also gives you a lot prettier look to that landing page.
Well, to dial that back, I think, you know, when you say it's not an intranet kind of thing, it very much is an intranet kind of thing, because that's what intranets are supposed to be, is personal and contextual, right? Rolling up your corporate news, plus your personal news, plus the things your peers are working on, plus what you're working on. That's where kind of all these intranet in a box products come from, and where a lot of them shine, and they'll still have their place. So correct me if I'm wrong, but for the home site thing, you can only have one, right? You have to go ahead and kind of, like you said, start with that communication site, get it all configured, and then you're going to say, okay, this is the home site. And then it rolls up, it does a couple different things when you say it's a home site. So you talked about like Microsoft Search. It makes sure that the search scope for that home site becomes tenant-wide right off the bat. It gives you very quick access to things like the SharePoint mobile app. So, you know, like if you visited that on mobile, it'll just go ahead and kick right up in the mobile app, which means the mobile app is compatible with that whole experience. It will automatically be connected to the SharePoint homepage, which is very, very, very much that me experience. So that's not your intranet, right? That's when you go to SharePoint in the app launcher and yep. It brings up your SharePoint homepage. So now I think you can do a couple interesting things here. If you think about maybe bringing over your customizations that you've made to your intranets over the year, like I can think of a couple organizations I've been with that have done this that could probably, for the most part, ditch a lot, 99% of their customization and just go into straight out of the box SharePoint between mega menus, some of the footer announcements, and they had all sorts of things around look and feel and some of the new web parts that are coming. And then most importantly, they also have some PowerShell coming that is going to let you swap your root site. You know, most of the time, if you wanted that heavy customization, it was probably done in its own site collection. So rather than being at tenantname.sharepoint.com, it was usually at like tenantname.sharepoint.com/sites/intranet, when really you'd probably just wanted your intranet to be at the root. So you'll be able to build out that communication site, turn it into a home site, and then swap it to the root, which will be pretty darn cool.
Yes. And that was one of the other things I really liked, because like you said, I've run into that with a few customers, especially customers that have been on SharePoint for a long time when Modern wasn't a thing, or even when Modern first came out, but you couldn't change that root site. So because you could use communication sites and team sites only on subsites, that's where their intranet landing page is. And they always say, they're like, well, why can't this be my homepage? And now, obviously, Microsoft, any new tenants, you actually get a communication site as your homepage. But for all those people that have been on Office 365 SharePoint Online for a while, that announcement about being able to swap a subsite and make it your new homepage landing page in SharePoint Online, I think it'll be huge for a lot of people. Something I know a lot of people were looking for, wanting, asking for, etc.
Yeah. And like I said, even if you can't swap, you might want to take a look and think about, I mean, it's a pain, but you might want to think about rebuild in some cases, because there's just a lot that's changed in SharePoint over the years. And it might actually be worth it in the long run for you to be on something that's more aligned to out of the box. So they've done a bunch with not just this functionality around a home site and extending communication sites, but they've also brought in a number of look and feel improvements. So things like having access to new site designs or being able to start maybe from a better place and more options for organizing your content with different section splitters, being able to do, rather than a lot of the horizontal splits that we're in, starting to bring in more vertical splits. And then they took things like last year where they had that SharePoint lookbook, where they kind of came out and published that PDF of, hey, here's how we're approaching and viewing design in SharePoint, maybe how some customers are doing it. They have a whole new provisioning service that they're standing up that is going to just go ahead and fire off those lookbook designs. So you could potentially have one-click access to just spinning up an entire site and having it ready to go. And then they're even improving things like site designs. They're bringing that into the GUI, so those don't need to be necessarily a fire off in PowerShell or use APIs to instantiate your sites things along the way.
Yeah, this PNP provisioning service is kind of nifty.
Mover is a cloud migration company that specializes in moving your company's files from file servers or cloud storage like Box, Dropbox, and Google into Office 365. Their patented technology makes Mover the fastest OneDrive file migrator in the world. Moving dozens of terabytes of data a day is a breeze. Use Mover's free, industry-leading migration guides or ask for a managed migration and they'll take the lead. With Mover, all your data is secure and intact. Running completely behind the scenes, you don't lose time, money, or hair while you transfer. Scan, plan, migrate, report. Migrations that don't suck with Mover. Visit mover.io for more info.
The other one that was kind of along the same lines of flipping those sites is they also now introduced the way in your SharePoint environment or in your SharePoint Admin Center to actually change the URL and the site for site collections. So if you previously created a site at mytenant.sharepoint.com/sites/ HR and you wanted to switch it to site/human resources, you can now switch that URL and just go into the GUI, say, change my URL, change HR to human resources, and it will change that site collection URL for you. And then it actually does an automatic redirect as well. So HR will start redirecting to human resources. So all those document links and anything out there that you may have already had will automatically redirect to that new URL.
Yeah, I'll have to play with that one because there's some interesting things there. What if I actually wanted to change the URL for the site so that I could reuse what the original URL was? Then a redirect doesn't do me any good. I mean, it's nice that it's there, but there's all sorts of edge cases for that one.
Right. That's on my list to go try is what happens if I change a URL and then try to create a new one at that old URL. I don't know that I saw that addressed anywhere, and nor have I had the chance to try it because it was announced like 2 days ago. But I agree with you. There's a lot of cases there where it's like, what's going to happen if I do this or if I try to do that, or how long will that redirect be there? Is that permanent? And can I never reuse that URL even though I can rename it?
Yeah.
Does that really do me a lot of good? It'll be interesting.
Yeah. And then I'm also interested in kind of like the whole rename, restore, like what happens along the way. And it's got some nuance to it, right?
We should go stand up a tenant and see how long it takes us to break it.
Oh, I mean, it's pretty easy.
It's
pretty easy to break a mod tenant. Doesn't take more than 5 or 6 minutes. Most of the time for me anyway.
Oh, all right. So back to the PNP one. I wanted to hit that news announcement because I know that's another one a lot of people, that's been like a top user voice request for a long time now. But yeah, back to this provisioning engine, there's a whole site for it. It's provisioning.sharepointpnp.com. And they already have a bunch of those up there. So I've gone in and deployed a few of these, and some of these are sample ones. Like under samples, they have a bunch of Contoso ones for an enterprise landing page, like a leadership site, some team sites, workshop sites. But then the other interesting one is they have samples, but then they also have solutions. And under here, they have a SharePoint starter kit that actually goes out and provisions a few site collections with different site collections, different SharePoint web parts, all of that, so you can use that. That one's a little bit more of an example, demo, sample solution where it's not just a site, but a collection of sites that all work together. But then they also have this Microsoft 365 learning pathway that isn't so much as a sample, but actually deploys a learning solution with streaming on-demand content about Microsoft 365 services to help you train your end users. So it's like a whole learning system that can get deployed into your tenant with videos and articles and a bunch of different learning solutions that you can use with your end users, again, to train them on that Microsoft 365 platform.
Yeah, there's a whole new learning solution to the whole Microsoft 365 learning path thing, which they're open sourcing and pushing out there, which sounded pretty interesting. One of the slides I saw for it that popped up was kind of like introducing people to what open source is and what it means for you with support. Because, you know, clearly they're pitching it to enterprise customers, and at the same time they're like, yeah, but we're not going to support it.
Yeah. So I don't know. I was trying to look with this provisioning engine. They have all the samples. How easy is it? And I don't know if you know, I was looking at the service description and it doesn't seem to call it out, and I haven't had enough time to dig into it. Like, if you want to leverage this in your own tenant, your own environment, for your own templates and sites to provision, I don't know that you can do it in the GUI, but I think you can maybe leverage it in different ways for on-prem with PowerShell and stuff. This is one I've seen it a few times, but I haven't played with it enough yet.
They've had this stuff in PMP. This is one of those nice kind of wrappers on the front end to make it a little bit more consumable.
Because they have the whole PMP provisioning commandlets that you can use with JSON, I think it's JSON templates and XML and all of that.
Yeah.
Is this just like a GUI front end?
Yep. So the way the flow goes is there's a tenant template, and what they're doing is they're still making those tenant templates. They specify, you know, your content, your configuration, your template, you know, like in those ones that are spinning up multiple site collections and the sites within them. And then what happens is that template or that declaration is what's used to go ahead and spin things up through the PNP provisioning engine. That's a CSOM extension, so that client-side object model. And you can spin it up that way, or you can use PNP PowerShell. Like you said, go ahead and kick that off and get it to where it needs to be. It's kind of sitting out there and it's ready to go. You know, if you don't like the templates, like you said, you can go ahead and extend it and push it out. These are all using templates that are maybe not documented to the level you want them, but they're sitting out there in GitHub. So they are consumable, and you could certainly spin them up yourself, customize them, make them whatever you need them to be.
Perfect. Sounds good. So a bunch of other announcements. We're not going to get through all of these. We're going to have to do part two.
Nah, they did a whole keynote. How hard could it be?
You know, they put the link out there to the keynote.
I did.
So there were a bunch of OneDrive announcements that some of these were interesting to me as well. There's going to be some improvements coming to the OneDrive sync client that, and I didn't realize this, it doesn't always do incremental syncs right now. Some of it is like, especially for certain file types that aren't Office documents, and I can't remember if Office documents are incremental or not, but they are bringing incremental sync. So that whole difference, let's not sync the whole file, let's just sync the difference to the sync client for pretty much any file you want to put up in OneDrive.
Yeah, the incremental sync thing was an Office client functionality for a long time. So what did that used to be called? You're making me dig into the way back when. I think it used to be called Cobalt or something like that.
I can't remember.
Because remember, they had incremental sync for Office documents, or incremental save for Office documents, rather, not even through OneDrive.
That was like to the database.
Yeah,
they had incremental.
Even for on-premises SharePoint. So being able to kind of drive those things. So even like incremental sync for a doc, like, because your docs are always saving, you know, you open a doc from OneDrive that's synced down to your local PC, you'll kind of see it always saving in the background, and, you know, it ends up with its little syncing spinner icon and all that kind of stuff.
Especially if you have that autosave stuff turned on where it's like,
so it effectively like locks it and then just kind of constantly syncs it and pushes it where it needs to be. So it's good that they're bringing some of that technology over to other document types along the way, because there are a lot of other document types that are in there, especially as they push out more and more of these file viewers. And, you know, however many they're up to, 300, 320, or whatever the number is today, to be able to make sure that people can just push the stuff up there and have it easily consumable. So if you think about like an AutoCAD file, those things are typically not like the lightest workload. And it would be.
You mean those aren't little files?
No. Or like GIS files, things like that.
Yep.
It'd be very good to have those just smoothed out along the way. It should do, depending on the organization, quite a bit for even outbound bandwidth.
Right.
And have things come down that way or go up that way.
Speaking of AutoCAD, DWG file previews are also now in OneDrive. So you can, if you have those AutoCAD DWG files in your OneDrive, you can now view them and preview them, all of that, right within your browser. So this is a partnership that Microsoft is doing with Autodesk to bring those new previews, file formats, some additional support for those into OneDrive. So that's, again, just nifty. Nothing for me, nothing groundbreaking for certain organizations. I'm sure they, like, that was the best announcement they've ever seen out of the SharePoint conference, but just continuing to improve that support for even other third-party file types. Another one that was interesting was Save for Later. So I don't know if you've ever done this, like with different news sites and different areas in the modern UI now, you can essentially bookmark files, or you could bookmark news articles and save them for later. So as news got posted on your intranet, you could go bookmark it, save you for later, and then you'd have like a whole saved for later section where you could go back and review them. Kind of nifty for news announcements. That is coming to files now. So this is both SharePoint files and OneDrive files. Yep, in OneDrive or in shared libraries, you can now click. It's like a little icon next to the share icon next to the file name.
The little bookmark icon.
Yep, little bookmark that looks like a banner from...
That looks like a bookmark, what it's supposed to be.
Okay, so but there's certain kids now that probably have never actually seen a bookmark because they don't ever read books. Another topic. Yeah.
If your kids aren't reading books and they're old enough to read, then that's the whole other thing.
They just watch YouTube.
Oh my goodness. That thud was the sound of my head hitting the desk.
You know your kids do it.
I know my kids read. They know what a bookmark is. And yes, they watch and they watch YouTube.
They know what a bookmark is and they watch a lot of YouTube.
All the things.
Anyways, side topic. You can click that now and actually save files for later too. So if there's a file you see pop up, I want to review this. I need to look at it later. You can click the little bookmark and save a file to read later now as well.
Yeah. Well, I guess no more Pocket or, well, I'm still going to use Pocket and Instapaper and all the things because this is for your intranet. It is, or your internal stuff. It's not for
externals. Is if you clicked save for later, it saved it for later and then added a task to to-do.
Stop it. Nobody needs more tasks.
I need more tasks.
All right.
Then I can feel productive because it's just something else I can check off as soon as I look at the doc. No. Anyways, sharing options. There were also some sharing options with OneDrive. They're bringing just that consistent sharing interface where you have anyone with the link, people with the link, people with existing access, specific people. Those options are going to... Right now, it's in OneDrive, Office Apps, Mobile Apps, Libraries, Teams. They're going to start bringing this into Teams. So I thought they publicly announced this before. If they have, they've talked about it before, where that whole SharePoint Files experience, the full views, metadata, all of that is coming into Teams. They're also bringing all of the sharing options into Teams. So essentially, you don't need to use your browser anymore to get to your SharePoint sites. Just go into Teams and you'll have all of the sharing, the views, everything for your SharePoint libraries right within your files tab in Teams.
Yeah, Teams, Outlook, the whole kind of thing. So it's about driving consistency across all of those as well. So there have been differences in some of those modal dialogues that pop up, you know, whether maybe you block a download or you add a password or a PIN or whatever it's going to be to those kinds of experiences. So consistency is good, right? Theoretically, it makes training easier. It makes adoption easier. And hopefully it remains consistent as they continue to push updates to that entire sharing experience.
Yes. So I think that does it.
Opsgility is disrupting cloud training as we know it with their on-demand platform, SkillMeUp. Their new design focuses on a user flow to better support role-based learning paths with these great new features. Real-time, hands-on labs are now included with each subscription to build your skills competence. Hundreds of cloud courses with more added daily to transform your skills for today's cloud-first careers. Role-based learning paths guide you through associated level courses in an easy-to-view layout and tracker. Microsoft Azure and Microsoft 365 certification prep courses and labs to support you leading up to exam day. Learn more and start your free 3-day trial at www.skillmeup.com.
Should I give you a funny story to end out the day?
Sure.
End out the recording?
I can always use a laugh.
You could use a laugh. I don't know if this was a laugh. It almost made me cry. So remember Microsoft Defender ATP?
Yes.
Renamed it from Windows Defender ATP to Microsoft Defender ATP because it's going to come out to the Mac.
Yeah.
So 2 days ago, it hit public preview for the Mac.
Correct. Yeah. You didn't have to sign up for it and justify your single Mac existence anymore.
No. So it's a little bit of work. There's like some scripts to run, an installer. It's not like a clicky-clicky, it's installed and working. So I went through and I did this. Because naturally, that's what I do. As soon as something new comes out, whether it's in preview or alpha or canary or whatever mode, I go install it and hope my Mac doesn't break. So I installed it. I got it running. And I noticed this when I initially installed another antivirus on my Mac like a year ago or so. It has a goofy interaction with OneDrive files on demand, where because it's trying to scan your files, it technically hits the files and it tries to start downloading them and pulling them down to your machine.
Yeah, yeah. It sees everything just as a sync, right? It's a touch. Right. So you end up in, like we talked about, that virtuous circle of the file's been updated and now it needs to push it and then download it and push it and download, push it and push.
Yes. So I talked to some guys in the OneDrive team, and they were like, we thought we had this fixed for all of the, for the major OneDrive or major antivirus clients, so it wouldn't mess with it. It doesn't actually prompt a download. Yeah, I'm not sure. So I don't think they've actually done it yet for Windows Defender ATP, because a couple hours after I installed it, I noticed I was downloading a whole bunch of files.
But only incrementally.
And okay, but so it starts filling up the hard drive. I can deal with that. I have enough hard drive space on it. I know it's not going to fill up my hard drive. But my computer started running really, really slowly. And I was like, what is going on? Is it just all these files getting downloaded? So I opened up Activity Monitor, and I have seen that it looks like there is a small memory leak in OneDrive with files on demand, where as it syncs, it starts taking up more and more memory. So every like 3 or 4 days, I actually have to reboot or kill OneDrive and bring it back up. Something like that to free up my memory and start the whole cycle over again.
I mean, you're really selling me on this OneDrive on a Mac thing. Keep selling me on antivirus. It's yeah.
Well, no, it's more the antivirus than the files on demand. I think it's a combination of the two. So Microsoft Defender exacerbated that memory leak to a massive degree. So did you see my tweet on how much memory I was taking up?
No.
Okay, so it was not the bandwidth, and it wasn't the hard drive that was causing my performance issue. It was the amount of memory OneDrive was consuming. Take a guess how much memory OneDrive was consuming when I finally caught up to it a couple hours later.
Oh, I don't know. What do you have on that thing? Like 16 gigs?
I have 16 gigs.
So considering that it goes to swap and pushes out, 36 gigs.
50 gigs.
See, I wasn't dreaming big enough.
You weren't dreaming big enough. It had 50 gigs of my memory consumed on my MacBook Pro. So as a warning to anybody that's like me and a glutton for punishment and going and installing all these previews, and I sent some tweets to the OneDrive team too, I'm assuming they'll get this fixed. Go in and make sure with almost all antiviruses, just to be safe, but especially if you go try this ATP preview, go exclude your OneDrive folders so that the sync doesn't cause a snowballing memory leak.
Yeah, you absolutely wouldn't want AV on one of the core places where you would actually want AV.
Yes.
Well, I wish you luck in your beach balls of death with your 40 some odd gigs of memory consumption on the OneDrive client.
I haven't looked. So I went in and excluded it. I haven't looked at what my memory consumption is this morning. It's not coming up right now. Yeah, we're not bad. We're like at a gig right now, which is kind of what I've seen. Like normal is a gig when that memory thing, before I've noticed it, gets up to like 10 or 12 gigs. That's about the highest I've seen it. And then Windows Defender ATP, up to 50 gigs. Again, it's preview. You have to give them some credit. That's why they do these things in preview, so people like me can notice this and let them know, and they can go fix it before it hits the general masses. But that is my Windows Defender ATP story for the day.
Sounds like more fun than I can shake a stick at.
Yeah, you should go try it, except that you don't have a Mac yet.
And on that note...
on that note, Scott's going to hang up on me before I start talking about Yammer.
Yeah, yeah, we can do Yammer some other time.
All right, we'll go Yammer away some other time.
All right, cool.
Go enjoy your day.
Thanks, Ben.
All right, talk to you later, Scott. If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening, and have a great day.